All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Let's start this over. Good morning, everybody. Good morning. On this Tuesday morning on the 28th, I just cannot believe we're this close to February. We've only got like 10 days left of our fast. I mean, how this thing has flew by. And many things, especially the ones that are in the Bible college that are, you know, kind of pausing in time to focus on their relationship and what they really believe, you know, and it has brought some things to the surface of their roots, and they've had to deal with it. I've had a couple drop out already. You know, you just don't know people till the pressure gets on. But this is where the overcoming and the perseverance comes in. So I still have the majority of them there, praise God. But it is a heart surgery, you know, and it's a dealing with what do you really believe? Not processed religion or anything like that, but just a raw, organic, I'm getting with you, God, you know. And I'll never forget, you know, me walking out there in the woods, because, you know, I told y'all that when I was younger and all that abuse and stuff, that's where I really heard the voice of God. When I went down in the woods and got by the creek and just talked to him, this is when I was 9 years old. And that's where I began to really learn, you know, his voice and build a relationship with him and whatnot. So that's what this organic Christianity book is. It's taking everybody back to that point. You know, back to the garden and discovering y'all really need to know who he is, because of the deception, you know, that's happening out there right now. And I don't even know how to explain the deception. I probably should just write a book on how to define deception on YouTube, you know, because it's like, number one, the deception is that everybody should think of when you watch these people is just because they tell a little bit of truth does not mean that it's all the truth. Do y'all hear what I'm saying? Because they will identify the problem. Remember, my master's degree is corporate communication. So God help me to communicate to you guys how to learn this. Because if they're bringing you the problem, okay, like for instance, I had a couple of people send me a video of this woman prophesying that Trump's going to get assassinated. Well, we all know that's going to happen, right? So I'm like, well, yeah, it's probably true. But then the rest of the prophesying that she did is what was a farce. And so I wrote them back and I said, this is a farce. And the reason it is because there is a group of people out there and they're all the same. They all give the same prophecies in the same vein. And they all believe that Obama's the Antichrist. They all say Yeshua HaMashiach, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they all believe that it's all over there. See, it's another distraction deal to distract from what Trump is doing, to distract from what the jab is and what it is that we're really facing. So they give all these prophecies about destruction to America and all this. We know it's true. We know our country is under judgment. So people will be trusting them because they're given this little bit of truth. But the problem is, what is the solution to the problem? The solution to the problem that they're leading them to is that what you're looking at is not what you're looking at. It's over there. And see, that's what NAR is doing. NAR is, you know, got all these preachers online. They're telling everybody, you know, that tribulation's coming and, you know, the mark of the beast is coming, yada, yada. You know, that it's all over there. So if you have that theology, you know, or you're teaching people that, you know, we're already in the Gog and Magog war, was the Israel war, and then now we're in the millennial reign, and then now you're going to, you know, I forgot, Judgment Day, you know, the White Throne Judgment, all that is saying that there's not going to be an Antichrist. There's not going to be, you know, all this stuff that we're looking at right now. So I don't know how anymore, you know, I've written all these books, which I am going to get my bookstore put back up because I've got too many requests, but I don't know how else to help people to see deception. You know, I've tried to give you examples like the way they hold their hands, that Namaste hands, which is, you know, pledging their allegiance to India, to this Hindu religion. You know, and I try to tell you that Hindu religion, that's a farce, that's a part of Kabbalah, which, by the way, I found yesterday an interview of a woman I did back in 2020, back in April, when this all first freshly blew up, you know, the COVID, the Great Reset, which now they're trying to say the Great Reset is gone. It's no more the Great Reset. What a farce, people. We are going in the golden age, but it's only because they're bringing the solutions to the problem they started, really is what it is. But anyway, so I interviewed this woman named Deanna Lopez, and she wrote a book called Kabbalah and the Secret Mysticism and the Kosher Pig. Jewish Mysticism and the Kosher Pig. Powerful book. Powerful book. And she talks in there about how, according to Kabbalah religion, they want, the Jews want people to leave the name of Jesus. And they want them to say Yeshua. Yeshua HaMashiach. And because it's not Jesus. It is Metatron. It's this Antichrist God, this, you know, whatever. But they want to leave the name of Jesus because the name of Jesus is the power. And that's what demons know. I can't even tell. Y'all have heard from Jesse about how, you know, the demons will react to Jesus. They react to his name. That name is Jesus Christ. I don't care what these people tell you. But anyway, so I found this interview that I did with her. Do y'all know this woman has disappeared? I have no idea where she is. Because I was looking her up. I was going to ask her for another interview. I would like to catch up. You know, this is 5 years later. So I'd like to see what's happened since then, but nowhere to be found. And I was thinking she probably disappeared because her book, I mean, exposes to the bone what they're doing with Kabbalah, which is the false tree and all that other kind of stuff. Now, on Patreon yesterday, I did post a video of a guy that I am trying to get in touch with to interview because it looks like he's pretty legit. He did a good video about this, and he talks about her and he talks about her book. So, and there's many, I looked on Facebook, there's many, you know, people on there talking about referencing her and her book, but where she's at, I don't know. If any of you know where she's at and how I can get in touch with her, maybe you know her or, you know, have some type of contact, you know, let me know because I would love to interview her again. But anyway, that interview is at 11 o'clock. So we want to make sure we're done here by 11 o'clock, if that's okay. But after that interview, I will probably do a news broadcast because there's a lot that Trump is doing right now. One of the main things that he's doing that I think is going to disrupt everybody, and pretty fast, is the fact that because of Elon, in their checking out everybody's money, Trump has put a freeze on the money, on the grants and the funding that the government gives to people. Okay? This is huge because we're talking major companies that live off of that funding. So how that's going to affect the economy while Elon's going through there, you know, sifting everything, I don't know. And then last night I saw Vivek Ramaswamy talking about why he left Doge. Remember we was talking about this yesterday. And it definitely was the difference between him and Elon's beliefs. Okay? They had a falling out. So he said he didn't get fired, but they did mutually decide that he needs to move on. So he is moving on to Ohio, and he's eyeing the governorship. He wants, because what they're going to do is they're going to push the power back to the states. So instead of it looking like the way that this is how they did COVID, the COVID, remember, they pushed everything. I remember this plain as day. They pushed everything back to the states. And then they had all these governors in position, and they would force their states and the people in their states on certain laws, social distancing, masks, lockdowns, all that stuff. They had the states do their dirty work so that it does not look like the federal government is forcing everybody to take the V. You see what I mean? They had the companies pressure the people, and they had the states, the governors. So what they're doing right now is what I see is they're setting up the government in the same way for the shift, you know, where they're going to begin telling the states, you know, you're the ones in charge, but they've got all these people stacked. Even my governor, that is so sad about my governor in Tennessee. He is. My ex-husband worked for him and still works for him over 30, maybe 40 years by now. So, well, I guess it'd be 30 years because he's only, I'm 56, so he'd be 59. But he's worked for him since he was out of high school. And good man, good company to work for, good solid man, businessman, you know, huge company, biggest one in Nashville for plumbing, heating and air and all that. So when he ran for governor, you know, he looked so legit, you know, he had really good roots, good Christian man and whatnot. But what have we seen since he got in? He's caved. He's just like Texas and Florida. You know, same vein. But they just said that he was with President Trump the other day. He drove to North Carolina. When President Trump was in North Carolina, he drove there. He was, but I guess he would. Never mind. They just explained why he did that, because it affected Tennessee too. So that makes sense. But anyway, so he's all up in this agenda. So. Maybe that's why Vivek is, you know, headed towards Ohio to make sure they can, you know, gather the reins of Ohio, you know, type of deal. But by them halting the funding and the loans, you know, it's a federal freeze of federal aid. I mean, this is going to affect, you know, a lot of people. It's called a widespread pause of federal loans and grants, federal payments. So we're, you know, the country is definitely going to be going through a lot while they're, you know, reshaping and moving everything around. All right, now, I served a lady in the state of Tennessee, and I found a book that she had sent me, and I want to read it to you guys, her daily encouragement. Her book is called Daily Inspiration, 365 Golden Treasures. Her name is Opal Dalton. She is an elderly lady, probably close to 80 by now, and a mighty woman of God. I spoke at her women conferences and, you know, stuff. I was on her TV show. She has a TV show there in Knoxville, Tennessee. And she has a beautiful little cabin up in the mountains there, you know, in eastern Tennessee. Okay, so today's subject in her book is called Cumbersome Things. Luke 10:41-42. And Jesus answered and said unto her, Martha, Martha, thou art faithful and troubled about many things. Thou art careful and troubled about many things. But one thing is needful, and Mary has chosen that good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Martha was planning a meal, and there was so much to do. Martha was doing the preparation all by herself, and perhaps it began to feel burdensome. She was probably used to cooking and serving. However, in this instance, she apparently became troubled and resentful because Mary was not helping. We've all been there, huh? The scripture doesn't say if she asked Mary to help, but Martha apparently felt she should have offered. After all, Jesus was their special guest. Her emotions were taken over. Finally, Martha voiced her complaint against Mary to Jesus. Now, Jesus knew what was going on in Martha's heart prior to her complaint, as we can see from his words to her. This was actually a teaching moment for Martha. She had lost the joy of serving. Is that anybody out there today? Perhaps she forgot to do all things as unto the Lord and not to man. If you become cumbered in your serving, it will become a hindrance to the joy of serving. Use keen discernment and serve only where and how God leads. Prayer, Lord, help me to remember that although life at times seems unfair, you are my faithful and fair rewarder. Help me to serve you well as I do all that I do as unto you. Now, last night in Bible college, we finished up the book, Organic Christianity, and in the end of the book, I share my life, you know, and some personal things in the book. And so, yesterday, I spent about an hour or so, and I went through my old pictures, and I shared my life with them, you know, and told them some stories last night about different pictures and people that I had been with, but one of the main points of it was, is that when I was in my pit from 2013 to 2015, so it was 3 years, when God told me, shut down television, shut down radio, listen to me only, and go where I tell you to go and do what I tell you to do type of deal. During this time, when I didn't care if I was homeless or what the situation was through those 3 years, I always served. That's one thing I learned, is I was not idle with my time. You know, God had me in a dormant stage of learning. And during that time, you serve. You give. You know, you'll never be a good leader until you learn to be a great follower. And that is very, very true. You serve unto others as you would like to be when you get there. You take on, when you serve, you take on their vision. What has God, this is the way I did it when I served all these people and lived with them. I'd go live with them for months. And while I went there, I'd say, okay, what is your vision? What is your heart? What has God called you to do? Because I'm here to make that happen. You're sowing into their vision and what God told them to do. You don't go there to change their vision. Come on now. You don't go there to try to correct their vision. When you serve, you serve. That's what servanthood is. You're not there to solve their problems. You are there to help them to alleviate their problems. Because here's the key about ministry, And I know Miss Sherry, she's a pastor, she's on here. I know she can attest to this. When you have a ministry, you answer to God for everything you do. God gave you the dreams. You paid the price. You gave up everything for this. You have suffered for this. You have carried this baby. You have worked this baby. You have plowed this baby. And then people come along and they have different visions of how that baby should be run. But you're the one that birthed it and suffered for it and plowed through it and God dealt with you about it, yada, yada. Y'all hear what I'm saying? It's not your job to come in there and to tell them how to run it. You come in there and help them. You can give suggestions, yes. But in servanthood, you are going to bless. You're going to pray for that leader. You're going to bless that leader. And you're going to serve that leader. Because God is watching. You know, I got to tell you a couple of stories. Oh, there was this one woman, man. She was like a slave driver. I mean, of course, I did work for her, you know, from 5 o'clock in the morning till midnight. I'm a workhorse. My natural tendency, I'm a workhorse. Okay, so I'm ready to work. I don't like being idle, you know, type of deal. So I loved it. You know, I helped her with the website, graphic design, all that kind of stuff, yada, yada. And so, but after a couple of months, you know, she started really bothering me and getting on my El Nervo, you know. So I'd have to go for walks. And I'd have to just talk to God. God, you know, my nerves, I'm on the edge, Lord. You know, like, I got to have you here. I need more grace. Because, see, that's what grace is. Not that I'm going in there and changing her. Not that I'm going in there and stirring up trouble. I am walking out the door. I am walking and talking to God. Because you'll never understand how this is until you have a ministry of your own. And you see the price and how you have to answer to God about all this stuff. I mean, it's not an easy thing. It's a very serious thing. What God has given you. Because you will stand before God and you will answer for every person that come in your path and everything that happened, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when you get your ministry and you pay your price and God tells you to give up everything and tells you to leave your daughter back in Tennessee and go to Ohio and serve him. He tells you to leave your most precious dog and tells you to give up all of your beautiful house that you just got and built, when he tells you to, you know, give up your little trailer that you had paid off and live such a cushy little life and all comfortable in the prayer closet. When God tells you to do all that, you understand the price that you paid to get where you're at and to do what God has called you to do. So the reason that I'm telling you this is because that's where a lot of you are. God has put you there in the pit. And I'm seeing this with these people in Bible college because I've read their life stories. I've seen where they came from. I'm with them. My heart is with them. I'm praying for them. I'm watching them. I'm seeing them grow. I'm seeing them, you know, grab the vines and try to pull them off their tree when it hurts really bad to do it. I'm seeing this. So as you're in the pit, just learn from me. You know, the pit is the most beautiful place to be because as you're serving, that is where you're growing. You're on the potter's wheel and God is, you know, really purging you and he's making you beautiful. He's making you that beautiful bride without spot and wrinkle. But we have to go low to get there. you know, and that's what I call it. You have to go low. You have to, you know, be humble, and you have to humble yourself and think about others first and serve them. As God is healing you and purging you and cleansing you and doing what he's going to do. And all that time is so precious. All that, you know, him bringing that stuff to the surface. And that's what's happening in Bible college. See, God's bringing all this stuff to the surface. And people are having to, you know, examine themselves. And some of them ain't making good choices, sad to say. But it is what it is, because the potter's wheel, it hurts. When those bumps come around and he has to put a little more pressure on that bump, you know, it hurts. But see, this is where you come out like fine wine. You come out beautiful. And then one day you're standing in front of the White House, the biggest house in the world. And you're standing there, just an old country girl from Nashville, just a nobody. And you're standing there saying, why am I worthy to walk through that door? Who am I? You know, and you got all these things going on in your head. But yet you have been 5 years in that pit, suffering, allowing God to pull and pluck and purge and burn and sift. And remember, I just left a year before, you know, a couple of years before, where he made me go through all that healing and deliverance, having all those demons cast out. And this was after I went through the 3 years of, you know, it was like, how much am I going to be on the surgery, Lord? You know, the table getting surgery. But that is how the Lord makes you beautiful. I mean, this is the beautiful stage, is staying on that potter's wheel. So I just want to encourage everybody this morning to hang in there, you know, because your dress is being cleaned. You're in the dry cleaner right now. He is cleaning your dress. And you are going to come out of this so beautiful and so white, and allow him, when he brings that stuff to the surface, to heal you and to, you know, correct you and to help you be teachable, you know, have a servant's heart. There's a time when you're going to lead, because when you lead, it's a, almost like that said, it's cumbersome. It can be cumbersome. I'm sure Sherry can attest to that too, Miss Jody. You know, it can be cumbersome because of the weight of it. People will never understand the weight of ministry unless you do it. It's very cumbersome, you know. And I have a feeling that through this Bible college, this first class, that God's calling some people into full-time ministry. And I'm telling you right now, it'll cost you. It'll cost you. I'm not pushing them. This is just, I'm just saying what I'm seeing. Because time is up here. And God needs people that will focus, you know. He tells you be sober and alert in this hour. And that means that you're alert to what is happening out here. You are, you know, sober, so you're listening. You're allowing him to show you, you know, you're allowing him to mold you and shape you, so that you can do what he's called you to do. Time is running out. You're only going to be here another year, two, three. You know, you're only going to be here for a little time. It's going to go by very fast. And there's no time for wasting time. There's There's no time. And see, this is what I was saying about what I do disagree about Bible college. Their theology. They tell these kids, now all of y'all had to have faith to get here. You had to have faith to live here for 2 years. To have God provide for you. You know, in other words, when you go to Bible college, and I'm talking about like ones I've been to where it's a faith walk. You know, I'm not talking about regular seminary like Assembly of God or anything, but I'm talking about like the two I went to actually was like that. It was the faith walk. And it's a spirit thing. And so you had to go through that for 2 or 3 years. But then you're going to tell people when they leave, you need to leave here and go back in the workforce. See, I don't get that. Because God took you through all that and all that education for what? For you to go back in the system? I mean, you know, he called you to greatness, to, you know, be a world changer. So what happened is these students go back in the world. And then it sucks them in. That's what I've seen. And because they think, you know, what they tell them is, you need to go back out to the workforce. And then when you get enough money saved up and everything, you know, years later after you got a savings going, then you can start a ministry because then you have a little cushy pad. See, that just seems so weird to me when they tell you, come to Bible college by faith. You know, and I'm not putting these Bible colleges down, please me. I'm just saying that I believe when God calls you, that you listen to him. And this is what I've tried to tell my children. God is your lead. He's the one that's going to lead you where to go. See, when I first went in the pit years ago after I graduated my master's degree, I rubbed all their theology wrong. I did exactly opposite of what they was telling them to do. So much so that they called the Bible college and told on me. My pastor called me in a 4-hour meeting telling me, no, you're not doing this. No, no, no. And I told him, yes, I am. I said, I told him I've known God since I was 9 years old. I know what he's telling me. I said, what y'all are doing, because I knew it was a y'all deal. I said, what y'all are doing is asking me to disobey my God. That's what they're doing. He said, I'm telling you, you ain't leaving this church. Because what it is God had told me, I want you to travel. And, you know, he had already had me praying for people on their deathbed. But then that was my first assignment. My second assignment was, I'm going to have you start traveling, serving ministries. And, I'm your boss, so I'm going to have you to teach all these ministries out here across the country what you know about corporate communications. I want you to help these churches. So that's what I did. And, you know, that's what they rebuked me for, because they said, God only has you serve one pastor. You are not allowed to go out here and serve all these pastors. That is not God. And I said, I know what God is telling me. So I disobeyed my pastor. And I went out there and I started doing it. And of course, everybody left me, abandoned me, yada, yada. So years later, really didn't take long, maybe a couple of years, when the pastor saw what was happening out there, and he saw the blessing of what I was doing, because these pastors were calling him and telling him how much they appreciated me. When I went back to town, he called me up in front of the entire church, and he repented. And he said, I just want everybody to know that I highly esteem this woman. That's what he told the church. He said, I highly esteem her. I honor what she is doing for all these pastors. And he looked at me in the eyes in front of everybody there. Because, you know, I don't know who knew about what happened between me and him or whatever. But he asked me to forgive him. And, I, of course, I did. And, you know, but he supported me after he saw what I was talking about. You know, and but I've always been a forerunner in everything I do. Everything I've done, it's like rub different people wrong because they've never done it. But it's okay. The Lord always, you know, backs me up later type of deal. Like when I went to the White House, of course, that was so crazy. But I was the only evangelical there. Can you believe that? CBN was not there. TBN was not there. Nobody was there. There was one guy that was from the state of Wisconsin, and he would travel back and forth, you know, about every 4 months. But that's it, you know. But now they're all in there. So it is what it is, you know. But anyway, I just want to encourage you guys that if you're feeling the leading of God, you know, to go into full-time ministry, if you feel that call, then I'm going to tell you a story. And you can do it because it works. All right? So when I got baptized, when God told me he was jealous for me and wanted me all to myself, all to himself, I said, all right, Lord, well, I will marry you then. You know, if he kept telling me, listen to Dennis. That is funny. He said, if you will let me, I will show you what a real husband is. And I said, all right. So I get baptized, and then I told y'all about what happened, how when I went under the water, God took that perversion, and I come up out of the water a beautiful, healed woman. You know, just I haven't felt that since I was 5, since I was molested. And so I come back up and I, you know, was healed of that. And then about 4 days later, you know, he had delivered me from smoking and everything. And, oh, I used to love smoking cigarettes. What the world? But 4 days later, he woke me up at 4 o'clock and he said, now I was 36 years old at this time. And he said, I am calling you to World Harvest Bible College. You're to go to Bible college. I said, what? I am 36 years old. What do you mean calling me to Bible college? Because, you know, Brock had just went the year before. And he said, that's right. I want you to go to Bible college. I'm like, this is not God. This is the devil. There is no way I'm leaving this house. Because remember the story of how God gave me that house the year before and the miracle of what happened? So now he's asking for it back. What the world? So so afterwards, I was, you know, doing this four-hour-long Bible study. And I was studying all these kings in the Bible. And I come across this, oh, Miss Carla, I just now saw your chats over here, so cute. Carla said, I have one nerve left and you are on it. That is funny. But anyway, where was I at, Carla? I looked at your stuff and got distracted. What was I talking about? I got in the Bible study. That's what it was. I was studying the kings. So I came across that king, Gideon. And Gideon told God, listen here. I think this is you telling me to go to this battle, but I just want to make sure this is you telling me, so I'm going to put a fleece out there. And he said, if you let dew fall on this fleece, in the morning, I will know this is you telling me to go. So he wakes up the next morning. There's dew out there on the fleece. And then he's like, well, I could have been, you know, and he's like, I'm going to do another one. Okay. If dew does not fall on the fleece, but falls on the ground around it, I will know that you're for real. So he goes out there the next morning and God does it. He makes that thing dry and all of it's wet. You know, I may be telling the story wrong, but it's like that. But God proved it to him again. So I'm sitting there reading this and I'm thinking, God is telling me to go to battle. He's telling me to go to Bible college and give up everything. He told me, sell your house, give away all your furniture, give up everything and follow me. That's what he said. Now, don't forget that my daughter had just moved in with her father because he was single and by himself, and she felt sorry for him, you know, and she was tired of living in a preacher house at that time, too, because she had two brothers that she couldn't do nothing because everybody knew it. Oh, we know your brothers. Oh, yeah, them old preacher brothers. We ain't touching you with a 10-foot pole. But anyways, because she would go to dances, and them boys would go there, and they'd step in between her and a guy, and they'd say, back up, back up. Anyway, so I'm sitting there thinking, all right, you wanted me to go to Bible college, you know, and here's Gideon with the fleece. I'm going to do that too. So the next morning, Lord wakes me up 4:00. I said, I want you to go to Bible college and I want you to sell your house, give away everything you have and follow me. So I said, all right, Lord, all right. If this is you, I just want to make sure this is you because I am not leaving this house until I know it is you. So what I'm going to do, Lord, is I was doing some research today, and I found out, because God is real like this, guys. He is real as the day. This is what organic Christianity is. I am talking to him just like I talked to Dennis. That's how I do with God. So I was like, God, now, I was reading in the Bible about Gideon and how he put a fleece out there, and you honor Gideon. Because Gideon was just like me, Lord, where I said, I ain't leaving until I know this is you, Lord. So I'm going to put a fleece out there. Now, if you do this, then I will know that it is you, and I will go. I will go. I don't care if it's with nothing. As long as I know that it is you telling me to go. So what I said was, is I said, Lord, I was looking at their school. Now, my son, he's fixing to be a senior. He's ending his junior year. He's the class president. He was going to run for class president his senior year. And you know he's having to give up his life, too. This ain't just me you're calling. So what I'm asking, Lord, is that you will pay his way to go to that preparatory school, which is right next to the Bible college, and he won't have to go to Columbus schools. If you will pay that, because you know I ain't got the money, I said, if you'll pay $4,500, then I will know that that's where you want me to be. So I said, all right, Lord, then I'm going to wait and see what you do. So the plan was put in motion. So about 2 days later, I get a phone call. Jen, I am going to Columbus, Ohio to visit that Bible college. They're having this big event there, and I've already got the hotel and everything, and, you know, I just want somebody to go with me. So if you'll just ride with me, you won't have to pay for nothing. I just need somebody to go with me. And I'm like, what? I'm like, you got to be kidding. God is already going to bring me up there and check this place out, huh? I said, all right. So I get up there and, you know, they're having this big meeting with all the leaders of the world there, you know, under Rob Parsley. He has a pastor's alliance. And these are, you know, all people that went to his Bible college. And so they stay connected every year and they come in for a big conference. So, I go in this room, and they're all in there. There's about 5,000 of them in the gymnasium. And at first, I was kind of intimidated because they was all dressed to the nines, and I was just dressed in the best I could, but, you know. And so I sat down, And there's this woman sitting next to me, and out of the blue, she does this. She goes, "Thus saith the Lord, I have called you to come up here to go to Bible college, and I'm going to pay for your son. Don't worry about a thing." And then went right back to talking to somebody else. And I was like, wow, God just confirmed that he does want me to come up here. I'm like, okay, but Lord, I still need that $4,500 up front. So the next day, which was the last day of this conference, I go to the altar to pray about, am I called to come up here to go to Bible college? So I go to the altar and I'm up there and I'm praying, you know, and then I get this tap on the shoulder from this woman. Well, she was a professor at the Bible college. So she tapped me on the shoulder and I turn around. She goes, "Thus saith the Lord, I have called you to go to Bible college. Don't worry about paying for nothing. I'm going to take care of it all." So I got two confirmations. Then I had like the word of the Lord. That was all I needed. He gave me that confidence on the inside of me. It is me. I know that I know. God has confirmed it twice. I know that I know this is the word of the Lord. I shall go. I didn't have the money, but I knew he was going to do it. So I go back home praying in tongues all the way home. I get home and I stand up in front of the church. Now picture this, y'all. This is hilarious. This is only 2 weeks. I mean, picture this. Okay. 2 weeks ago, I'm partying on Saturday nights. Okay. I'm still going to church sometimes with a little smell of alcohol, you know. I'm floating in and out. I did not want to give God all that he was asking for because I knew the price I would have to give up. So when I gave it up, then wham, bam, you know, he tells me immediately, "I have a calling for you. I want you to leave. I want you to go to Bible college," you know, as soon as I surrendered all. So 2 weeks later, I'm standing in front of this church. Now, remember when I got baptized, I had testified to the church, you know, "Look, y'all, I've been sinning. I'm just going to be real with you. I did not want to give God all he wanted me to give me, but I am marrying him tonight and I am giving him my all." Okay, so now we are 2 weeks later. I got back from the Bible college visit. I stand up and I testify. I said, "Well, I just got to tell everybody testimony." I said, "You know, 2 weeks ago, I was delivered from smoking. 2 weeks ago, God called me to Bible college. So I'm letting y'all know I just got back from up there and God confirmed that's where he wants me." So he told me that I'm to give away all my furniture. I have beautiful furniture. I mean, you know, the kitchen table, the dining room set, which is a German furniture. So intricate and beautiful. It's a table that seats 12 people with the beautiful cloth feet and the beautiful cloth and, you know, the three china cabinets and all this, you know. And I said, "Anything y'all want, you can have it." The Lord told me to go. And so they came. Boy, they took all my stuff and I contacted the bank and, you know, they bought it back at cost. And so I didn't, you know, have any trouble there. And then, but I didn't have money. I didn't have the money for gas to get there. So I did have a van that I had paid on almost 5 years and it was almost paid off. I only had like, you know, maybe 4 months left to pay on it. And, but it was one of them old, you know, they used to call it the shag wagon. Y'all remember them vans? They were the big conversion vans type of deal. But I needed that with my three kids. They all played sports and we'd take the football team in there and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. But anyway, so it was that van. So we had that loaded with boxes and we rented a little U-Haul trailer to pull the boxes. Somebody had donated that and somebody had filled that van up with gas, which was $75 back then. And so as we was getting ready to leave, I had a dime. This is the dime story. So we're standing there in the house, in this beautiful house that God had given us the year before, that we got to design and pick out all the cabinets and the flooring and all that. And it was so beautiful. And I got to live in that for a year. And I cleaned that thing spotless. I've always done this. Every time I leave somewhere that God gives me, because I know it's God that does this everywhere I go, I leave it better than what I got it. Always. And God honors me for that. But anyway, so it was all beautiful. I had washed the windows and everything. And I was standing in there with Andrew, and we held hands and we prayed. And I said, Lord, I just want to thank you that you gave me this home. Lord, I was able to live in this for a year, this beautiful brand new home, and I know you want it back. But I just want to thank you for giving it to us. And my kids, you know, at the end of their high school career, got to live in this beautiful, it was a little house, like 1,200 square foot. And I was like, but I'm giving it back to you, Lord. You know, nothing I have is mine. So I gave it back to him. So I get in the van. I'm saying bye to the house, and I'm having to leave my daughter. That was so sad. So we get in the van, and we're on our way. We get about halfway in Louisville, Kentucky, and my mother calls me. June, now how do you feel driving up there to Columbus, Ohio, with nothing but a dime to your name? Because she couldn't understand it. In one way, she was proud of me because I was going totally by faith. But in the other way, she's like, this girl's lost her mind. I mean, she's going up there with a, you know, a trailer full of boxes with nowhere to put it, you know. And I told her, I said, Mom, I don't know what to tell you except one thing. I know that my God is over there. I know he's waiting for me in Columbus, Ohio. I said, that's all I know to tell you, Mom. She's like, all right, we'll see, you know. So I get there in Columbus, and lo and behold, there was an apartment waiting. They heard we was coming. We had an apartment waiting, and I've told y'all this story. I don't have to go through all this again, but just to make it short so I ain't on here all day with this story, is that when I got there, God gave me better furniture than I gave up. This man that Andrew worked for, after we had already went to the school, they had prayed for us. They was believing God with us that God was going to pay the $4,500. So they went ahead and let my son on the football team. All right, so he's in there playing, and we're walking by faith. God paid my rent every month, just like he did in D.C., he paid $1,750 in D.C. every month supernaturally. He did the same thing here, which was $750. He did that, and then he brought my daughter home to me. About 4 months later, I got my daughter back. And then he paid my son's tuition by this boss he worked for. He went to the school and said, how much does this boy owe you? They said, $4,500. He said, all right, but what about, don't he have uniforms and stuff? Yeah. How much is that? Well, it's about $400. Well, what about senior fees and trips? Yeah, that's about, you know what. So that man paid that school about $6,000 that day. He just wrote out a check. So then he took him shopping. Now, this was, of course, after I gave Mama Parsley my diamond ring, and God wanted me to give her my mother's inheritance ring. Well, this is Rob Parsley's mother. And then she gave me her blessing of Mama, the Mama June blessing type of deal. It was 2 weeks later when all this happened. So then the man took him shopping, bought him a wardrobe of clothes, and then he went and bought him a car. And then when my son come home, he come home with a car, he come home with a wardrobe of clothes, and he come home with his school paid for. Yes, he did. So he come in and he's like, Mama, I got to tell you what God did today. So he told me, God paid this, God paid that. I'm like, wow. So a week later, God paid Brock's $1,200. And I told you the story of that, about these plastic surgeons that sent their wild kid off to church camp. Brock was the captain of the team, and that boy got radically saved and began preaching everywhere, and he went back home, and he started winning his city for Jesus. And then those plastic surgeons, the mom and the father were both plastic surgeons, came to the school, found my son, and said, "We're going to pay you through Bible college, and we're going to take y'all shopping," and sent them shopping to Lifeway Christian Bookstore on a shopping spree, and they was able to buy everything they wanted within 30 minutes and ended up being $1,500. So God did all these miracles, you know, and so that was the story of Bible college. And I could go on and on, but anyway, I don't even know why I was telling you that story. Oh yeah, they paid all that for Brock, and then they paid for his honeymoon, and I told y'all the story of the man. The Lord woke me up one morning. He said, now this was after I'd been in Bible college about 3 months. "Thank you, Carla, keeping me going over. I see how you are." So the Lord woke me up one morning. I mean, I had already been up to my neck in bills. I couldn't take another thing. I was at my wit's end. Everything was being stripped from me. They give me 3 eviction notices. My lights were getting cut off. The phones were getting cut off. Yada, yada. So I get all mad at the Lord, and I go to the Bible college on Saturday night. You know, I was in my nightgown. And I sat out there in my car, and I looked at all them nations' flags. Boy, now I see what God did. But back then, you don't know because you're suffering. But I'm sitting there in the parking lot of one of the biggest churches in the world, and there's all these nations' flags, you know, representing all the nations of the world. And I'm looking at these, and I'm saying, "Lord, you told me you was going to be my husband. And I gave up my old self and said, 'Yes, Lord, you said you was going to show me what a husband is.' Well, a husband pays the bills." See, this is how God revealed to me that it's not the husband that pays the bills, it's God. God is who we lean on, not the husband. But anyway, I said, "Where are you at, Lord? I got these kids. I got all 3 kids living at home, and I got all these eviction notices. Where are you at?" And then I said, "You called me up here, and, you know, here I am. I gave up my beautiful house, you know, and I come up here, where are you at?" You know, and then I said, "But you know what, God? I'm going to praise you anyway." And I praise him in the midst of my storm right there in front of all them nations' flags. Hey, who would have known? Now, this was back in 2005. Who would have known that in 2019, how many years later is that? 14 years. Somebody calculate, I think it's 14 years, from 2005 to 2019, that I would be doing the same thing. Look how God is. I'm out there on New Year's Eve of 2019 in front of the U.S. Capitol. Remember, God told me to go out there and worship him in front of everybody that was at the U.S. Capitol on New Year's Eve. And I went out there and I let it rip, baby. I worshiped my God like there was no tomorrow. Yes, I did. Well, the same thing. Now we're back at the Bible college. So I'm sitting there, I'm crying to God, and I say, "I'm going to worship you anyway." So the next morning, I get up and we're on our way to church. Ran out of gas halfway there. We get out and start walking, me and my 3 beautiful kids. We're walking down the highway. Well, traffic stops both ways because, you know, Rob Parsley's church is so big. And we was involved in so much of that church, you know, that everybody knew is there just about. And the traffic stopped and people get out of their cars. "Night, family, what are y'all doing walking down the highway?" I said, "I'll tell you what we're doing." I said, "I ran out of gas." So they said, "Give us the keys to that car." So they went and filled it up with gas. I went to the church and I went in there. You know, my nerves were about shot, you know. And I went in there and I lift my hand up and I'm going to praise you in the midst of the storm. All right. So I leave there and I go back home and I get a phone call. man, we're going to repossess that van. You got one payment left and you ain't paid it, so we're we're repossessing the van. I'm like, no, there cannot be another thing coming against me. I only have one payment left, and I kept praying for God to give me $500, and I never got it. Now they're repossessing my car. How are we going to get to church? How are we going to get to Bible college, you know? So they came and took the thing, and we got a ride to church that night. I mean, I just felt like I was stripped down to nothing, you know? So I go out there, and, you know, the worship there, Rob Parsley's church, I mean, you just can't make this up. It is just so phenomenal, you know. And I'm one of these worshipers that are just like, bam, you know, lay down lover of Jesus in worship, you know. And so I'm down there, and I'm just praising God. And I'm like, you can have it all again. You can have my car. You took my house. You can have it all, God. And so I worshiped him. The next morning, the miracle came. The next morning, I went to the Bible college. Brian, I know my I know my story sounds so crazy, don't I? But these are real. This is real. But anyway, I go to the Bible college. And, you know, we had to get a ride to Bible college. So this man walks up to me. He's a fellow student and he's married. And he says, ma'am, I don't know what it is about your family. He says, but God woke me up this morning at 4 o'clock and told me to pay all your bills. That man paid $10,000 that day. God came through him one day. That man went to the apartment building. He said, how far behind is this family on their rent? And they said, 3 months. And he said, I'm going to pay 3 months and I'm going to pay 3 months up. Yes, he did. And after that, we never had to worry about another bill. God, after that test of me praising God in the midst of the storm, the miracles rolled out, you know. But anyway, so he goes and pays all his bills, you know, and he takes the boys and buys them a beautiful, beautiful bunk bed. It was like $1,000. And this bunk bed was like a wooden one, you know, with the twin on the top and the full on the bottom. Well, now, who is this calling me? What is that? Where? I have no idea. But anyway, okay, so that was the first day. Well, that Friday night, we had the prom, you know, the winter prom, the winter formal. And that man called me the next day. He said, my wife and I was talking, and we have a formal Friday night, and we want to know if you're taking a date. Now, being that I just told you guys, I used to date all the time. You know, I told y'all how I was codependent on men and whatnot, so I was dating all the time. And so it was funny, my answer to him, because I said, actually, my date is my 3 children. I said, for the first time, I am going without a man. Jesus is my husband. And they said, we was hoping you was going to say that, so we're going to bless you. Listen to what they did. They said, we are going to buy you and your daughter a dress, and we are going to get your hair done, and we're going to get your nails done. Yes, they did. So I was like, wow, God, all right. So God is preparing me like Esther, huh? So that Friday morning, the night of the prom, or the day of the prom, The Lord woke me up, and listen, I had been blessed all week long with Bible college kids coming up and giving me gifts, like, because the heavens were opened after that point. So what happened was I was out to lunch, and I was, well, first, let me back up. So I had a dream that morning. Lord woke me up, and he said, because you gave up your house and car for me, I'm going to bless you with a better house and a better car. And, you know, yada, yada. So I was like, okay, wow, God's going to bless me, you know. So I go to the school, you know, and drop off my son at the school. And this little girl walks up to me. I mean, not this little girl, but the teacher, because the teacher had asked me to come to their seventh grade class and wanted me to share my testimony of how God changed my life as a woman and showed me that he's the true husband. And when I went to that class and I shared my story with these little seventh graders, there were many of them just a ball. And my mama's like, you were. Will you pray for my mama? Yeah, it's seventh grade. So she come up to me and she said, my class was so blessed by your testimony that we got you a gift, ma'am. I said, okay. And she handed me the prettiest glass box. Beautiful, with like mirrors. It's a mirrored box, kind of like a jewelry box. And she said, here you go. And inside this box was the most precious treasure. It was letters from those little seventh graders. And so at that point, I'm standing there holding this box. And then I'm thinking back 9 months earlier when I got baptized. Remember when I got baptized and God said, I'm going to show you that I'm the husband that you've always wanted. That, you know, I'm better than you could ever have as a husband type of deal. And right before I got baptized, this woman got up and sang this song called Alabaster Box. And it talks about the woman at the well that cried to Jesus with her tears on his feet. And that was me. You know, my perversion was so foul, you know, that my tears filled his feet. And when I got baptized, he took that perversion. So now, 9 months later from that decision of saying yes to the Lord, I'm standing there with this glass box of these little children that I told my children, I said, I want us to go to lunch today. Somebody had given me $20 to go eat. And we went to this restaurant. And we was looking in the box and we was reading the testimonies. We were all just bawling. I mean, just beautiful stories of how their parents, you know, my story blessed their parents and yada, yada. And because my story really sets women free of perversion, really. And to trust in God and not a man. But anyway, so while we're all sitting there crying, these four girls walk in from the Bible college. Mama June, what's up, Mama June? Because I told you they all call me Mama June. There's 500 of them. And they come over there and they give me loving. And they sit down and then one of them hands me this check. This piece of paper folded up, you know. I opened the check and it said $1,000. I looked at that check. Now, remember, my daughter just got saved a couple of weeks before because she saw this change in her mama. So now she's seeing God roll out these blessings this week and she's overwhelmed. So I took that check as it was folded up and I slid it across the table to my daughter. I said, look how good God is. She opened up that check and saw that it was $1,000. And she started bawling. And she goes, why is God so good to us? I don't understand all this. And the answer that I gave her is what I still preach to this day. Your obedience is where your wealth is. That's what I told her. Because I said yes, God opened the heavens. That is the obedience, see? So anyways, that night, you know, we went off and did our thing, you know, our little Cinderella thing where we went to get our hair done and our nails done and wore our beautiful dress. And when I walked in the Bible College that night, it was like winter wonderland. They had the red carpet rolled out in the gym and they had Christmas trees because this was, you know, right at the end of the first semester. So it was at Christmas time. And there was trees lining up the sides of the red carpet. So when you walked on the red carpet, you walked through winter wonderland. It was beautiful. They had that place decorated so beautiful. So when I walked in, I had one son on one arm, one son on the other arm, and my daughter on his arm. And we walked through together on that red carpet. I'm a different woman than I was 9 months before. And God had prepared me like Esther. And the Bible College was down there taking pictures. It was like a Hollywood moment. And they was like, wow, you look so beautiful. Because for the first time in my life, they straightened my hair. And I had long hair back then. You know, almost to my butt type of deal. And so they were all taking pictures, and it was a beautiful moment of me walking in with my children. Such a beautiful moment of holiness. It was really pretty. And so then we danced the night away and really enjoyed the night with all the kids that we loved because, you know, we was really close to these Bible College kids because they were calling me Mama June and telling me all their stuff, kind of like what's happening in Bible College right now. And I would encourage them kids, no, you keep going, don't give up, you know, and I was there for them, kind of like a mentor, and they loved me for it. Anyway, at the end of the night, they had a vote for king and queen. So I voted, you know, my son for king, because he should have been. He was, you know, he was the most loved king in that Bible College. He knew everybody's name, all 500 kids. Brock has a memorization deal, unbelievable, you know. And and of course he has my personality, so you know, me and him together, we tore that Bible College up, you know. And so anyways, when they announced the king, it was somebody else, and I was like, oh, well, this guy's awesome, too. And they said, but Brock Knight, it was really close between him and Brock Knight, you know. And but the other guy won, and then they voted me for queen. I couldn't believe it. I was like, what? I was so shocked. My mouth was to the floor. And they was all clapping and clapping. They honored me. So I went up there to have the crown put on. And I turned around and I saw my daughter. Oh, it was such a beautiful moment. Because she got to see God crown me. That was a moment of God saying, see, I told you. I am your husband. So, we danced the night away. So, we left there. And we all go to this restaurant because, you know, we're all hanging out and chilling. And I was there with 12 other students. And I said, I got to tell y'all what happened this morning. And I told them. I said, the Lord told me that because I gave up my house and car for him, he's going to bless me. So they, you know, kind of just listened or whatever. It was about 10 minutes later after I told them this prophecy. This man walked through the front door of the restaurant. And Brock said, hey, I remember you from Bible College. Hey, you got to meet my mother over here. God just brought her up here from Tennessee. This is how Brock did. He introduced me to everybody. And that guy stopped what he was doing across the restaurant. He pointed at me across the restaurant. He said, thus saith the Lord, because you gave up your house and car for me, I'm going to bless you, yada, yada, you know. And what's funny is I just told them what God said at 4:00 in the morning. So all their mouths was to the floor, you know. And it was about 2 weeks later on Christmas Eve when the Lord woke me up and he said, I got a present for you. I laughed and said, oh, yeah, what? He said, I'm going to let you get married again. I said, what? I was so mad at this point because I had fought him for 12 years about how jealous he was over me and he wanted me all this. I said, what? He said, you had to love me before you could ever love a man. You had your priorities in the wrong order. So, and he confirmed that twice. Two people at the church came up to me and said the same thing. Thus saith the Lord, you know. So, it was 17 years from that moment until it came to fruition. 17 years. So, anyways, that's my story and I'm sticking to it. There is one other thing I want to tell you that just come up in my memory, and I've never told y'all this story either. One time when I was in 2016, when I was with that guy, Dr. Morris, and I was with him 4 months when I was going through all his schools, learning about demonology, basically learning about casting out demons. And see, the thing is, God had me learn from him about roots and about demons, because when I went to the White House and I saw like the LGBT and all that and what these people were doing, the Lord had trained me, see, through this guy. So it all the boot camp that God put me through all the years was for that moment when I got up there, you know. But anyway, while I was there, it is crazy, 17 years until the husband came, I know. But anyway, one day, I had just come back from somewhere. I was on the road, and I come back, and I stopped at this truck stop. And it was right near his church where I was staying. I was living inside the church for 4 months. When I served all these ministries across the country, I slept everywhere. I slept in barns. I slept in churches. I slept in buildings. I mean, just wherever they could put me. I didn't care. I had a servant's heart, you know. But anyway, so I'm at this truck stop, and it's like, let's see. 1 o'clock in the morning, something like that, you know, where I've been traveling. Do you know that this man was over there getting a cup of coffee? And I didn't have any phone on me or nothing. And this man was getting a cup of coffee. And I looked at him and I said, good morning, sir. And when I said that, he turned around to me and he goes, thus saith the Lord. Yada, 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 yada. Listen, that man prophesied to me. It seemed like an hour. It was never ending. It was like this and this and this and this and this and this and what I've called you to do and this and that. I mean, just he was so captivating that everybody in the store stopped to listen to what he had to say. I mean, seriously, this guy, and the sad thing is, I didn't record it. I can't remember hardly anything that man said. But it sure spoke in my spirit. So I found out, you know, after that experience with this man prophesying like that, and he was a truck driver, that there are prophets that drive trucks. They call them, the truck stop prophets. So that was one of my experiences where God put a prophet in my path and prophesied. Now, I will tell you this, that a lot of things that I was seeking God about at that time, that man answered it one after another, after another, after another. God sent that prophet. So this is why I'm telling you guys, over and over again, I've told you how prophets are real. They are very real. And they can meet you anywhere, anytime. I'll confess about another prophet I met. This was when I was sinning. This is not a good thing. Actually, this one was not a prophet. This was an angel. I met an angel who looked just like a human. What happened was, in my years of sinning, in my past, when I was one foot in and one foot out and still was bound up with this sex demon, okay? This was one of them deals. I had been living good for the Lord for months, or 2 years. And I had, you know, I was pure. I hadn't slept with nobody. I was doing good, you know, yada, yada. But I meet this guy online, and he tempts me. So, you know, he invites me over for dinner. So I go to dinner. He seduces me. It was terrible. It was horrible. It was cold as ice. It was horrible. And so afterwards, when I went to the bathroom, I heard this voice speak to me and said, steal his, he had his clash ring there on the bathroom sink. And I was like, where is this coming from? I don't steal. You know, so I didn't take it. So I left there and I go to, and this is all in my life story book. So I'm not telling you, this is in my book. So, but anyway, so I go to the store. And in this book, I call it I Slept with Satan. That's what it felt like. But anyway, so I go to the store and I look in my purse because at the time I was a cheerleading coach and I had a pouch of money that I had raised with the cheerleaders in my purse. So I reached in there when I was at the store and there was nothing. He had stole that pouch. So I called him up. He would and answer the phone. I go back to his apartment, knock on the door. He wouldn't answer the door. I'm like, what the world? I go back to the gas station and I'm digging and digging. Well, maybe I dropped it in my car, you know, whatever. And I'm digging and digging. I'm panicking about, I felt, okay, all of those years of feeling pure and beautiful before the Lord, one night of a mistake, I felt like it sucked all that goodness out of me. It was like it unplugged God. I was empty. I was cold as ice. I knew God had left the building. It was terrible. I didn't like how I was feeling. I was embarrassed that I even did it. How did I get myself in this position? And so I'm sitting there with all these thoughts going in my head, right? So I'm digging in my purse. Again, looking again, and this man, and this is like 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, nobody around. And this man walked up to my window and he goes, ma'am, it's not in there. And I looked at him and I said, oh, yes, it is, sir. It's got to be here. And I'm looking in my purse and I looked right back and he was gone. He had disappeared. And I sat there in my car and I just started bawling. I knew God had let me know. I saw what you did. I'm not happy about it. And I cried and cried. Oh, I was so, I just didn't feel him anymore. I was empty. He was gone. And I was like, God, you knew what I did. I'm so ashamed. I was so ashamed. This was all before I got baptized. Now you know the power of what God took that night. So, the next day, I called my mother. Now, my mother, you know, she knew that I was promiscuous. She knew that I had one foot in and one foot out, and that I was battling this and whatnot. And I called her and confessed, Mama, I sinned last night. And she said, what do you mean? I said, Mama, I had sex with this man. He was the devil himself, Mama. I said, I don't even know why I did it. And I was telling her, yada, yada. So she goes, let me pray for you. And boy, she prayed. She tore a devil of one end down another. And then I felt God come back. I asked him to forgive me. God, please forgive me. Please come back. Please, please. You know. And he forgave me and he restored me. And God ended up giving the money back. You know, the man texted me one day, you know, I found this pouch that you left. So God dealt with him and made him give it back to me. But that was one of them times that I saw an angel. So when I tell you I got baptized and God delivered me of a perverted, foul devil, I am telling you, it was a perverted, foul devil. Because that was the way that I understood love, you know, and, you know, whatnot. I'm not making any excuses. It is what it is. You know, but then if you look at that situation and then you look all them years later, like 15 years later, when I accept the call of God after I graduate my master's degree and I accept the call of God and said, yes, Lord, I'll do what you tell me to do. Because remember, he told me, if you do not surrender to me, then if you ever backslide again, I will take your life. That's what the Lord told me. He said, your destiny is too big. You got to stop running. You got to accept it and just do it. So I said, yes, Lord, I will. And this is why I'm so serious. And this is why I do what I do, because I have no other choice. I mean, you know, God let me know, if you want all that I have for you, you're going to have to die continually. You're going to have to do what I tell you to do. So during that summer of repentance, in the summer of 2013, is when I was at the river and God said, I want you to write down every person you slept with. I was like, what? And he said it again. I said, what if I can't remember their names? And he said, just write down what you can remember. So I see, when you're sleeping around and you're living this lifestyle of, you know, partying and whatnot, and you don't care, you don't see yourself. You're just enjoying the moment, okay? But when you're before a holy God and he's calling you into ministry, he's going to deal with that. He's going to deal with what you did. And these people that say, God would never bring up your past, and God, yes, he does, people. You know, especially if you're going to be called to be used by him, he's going to have to deal with why you did things. And that's what he did to me all summer long. He dealt with it. So now I'm sitting here at the lake and I'm looking at all these names. And then I'm examining myself. Oh my God, look what you've done to your temple. Oh my world. You know, what a terrible thing you did, not only to you, but to your children. Look what you open the door. See, when we do things as parents, we open the door to the enemy, to our children. So thus, I opened up the door through all these perverted devils to come into my children through perversion. So God was telling me this while I'm looking at the evil and what I had done. So I'm looking at all these names. And then when I finished, I asked the Lord to forgive me for what I had done to my temple. And I meant it. Because I was bawling, bawling, bawling in repentance. Once I saw who I was and what I had done to myself, what I had done to my temple, then I had to ask God to forgive me and confess what I had done, right? So then I held the list up to heaven and I told the Lord, I said, Lord, I do ask you to forgive me for what I've done to all these people. And I am asking you, Lord, I mean, and I am choosing to forgive them for what they did to me. So, Lord, I'm giving all of this back to you, you know. And so the Lord spoke to me and he said, I want you to crumble it up and throw it in the river. I was next to a river. Now, the river was flowing very smoothly, you know, very slowly and smoothly. And I thought, throw it in the river, you know. So I threw it in the river, and the cutest thing happened. This little wave come out of nowhere, come up over that thing and took it straight down. And God spoke to me. He said, I have forgiven your sins from the east to the west. He let me know I did cleanse you and forgive you of that perversion, you know. So the point that I'm trying to say is, that was in 2013. I had no idea that just 5 years later, 5 years, because after that, remember, he had me go through that deliverance to get all the rest of the junk out. I mean, he went through a 5-year process. Don't neglect the process. Enjoy the process. That 5 years of purging and cleansing and healing and hurting and serving and humbling and, you know, all the things you have to do during this process, I would have never knew that God would put me in front of the most perverted, foul devil of the world. I had to face the LGBT demon that was over the entire world, like Leviathan. God put me up there battling this thing, but I couldn't have done it if that perversion was still there. Why? Because Satan is a legalist. He's a legalist. So if you don't deal with that, it will come back to haunt you later. And, you know, God knew that I had to go through that purity cleansing to be able to go up there and face those foul devils. And one of the things that has been so confusing to me, and I keep telling you guys this, is how the church has treated me about the LGBT. I still cannot believe it. From day one, when I began exposing, and it all started on my 2017 tour when I went 36 states, 18,000 miles across this country, and I saw the perverted foul devil in the churches. The perversion in the churches. And I began exposing it, and all them pastors got so mad. And much less when I went to the White House and saw it in the White House and what our country was doing with the LGBT. And I began telling everybody, you know, Trump is partnering with this perverted, foul devil, people, and God ain't happy about it. You better keep your mouth shut. They didn't want me telling people about it. And to this day, they still put up with it. But I'm telling you, the real Jesus does not. The real Jesus does not mix like that. All right, so I'm done with my stories, and I hope that really blessed you guys. And I'm just trying to encourage you that a lot of you are in this boat right now, you know, where you are going through this change. You're feeling the call to go further, you know, with the Lord. And, you know, don't neglect the process, because the process is where it's at. Because when you get out there, you won't be able to go back. You know, even to this day, since I left the White House and I have been just, you know, having offices and been reporting, you know, this way and traveling back and forth to D.C. and stuff like that, I still am not able to go back there. The process is a very, very special time of you being in a cocoon and allowing God to do his wonderful work that he's going to do in you. Because, see, you don't know what's on the other side of that process. And I'm really talking to some of you right now. And you're probably over there crying. Because God knows your process. He knows where you're at. But he knows the greatness in front of you. And he knows what's over there. But you're going to have to allow him to change you and mold you and make you in that process where you feel so abandoned and neglected and alone. But that's where he is. Because once he launches you, there's no turning back. So you soak it up while you can, you know. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. And serve. Don't be dormant. Serve. You know, give. Because you will, when you get out there and you're launched out there and now you're out there battling these devils, you're going to wish you had people like you was. How I long to have somebody serve me like I did them pastors. Somebody was educated as I am and everything and go in there and be able to mow it down. You know what I'm saying? All right, so I'm going to stop the recording and I'm going to allow you guys to, you know, as to pray and talk and give your thoughts. I can't wait to hear your thoughts about all this. All right, here we go.